They ain't ready for me.
Good morning, Sandy Williams, sitting in for Earl Ingram. We've been in a time warp, maybe, if you've been listening to the show, because just 10 minutes ago it was yesterday's show, and now it's today's show. We had a technical glitch, and we had an hour of replay this morning for the first hour. Now we're into hour two, and this is actually hour two of today. I've got with me, who have I got with me? Scott Williams.
One of the Williams boys.
Yeah. Who was, so this is a continuation of yesterday. It's yesterday again today. Connor, we're up and flying, are we?
Whoop. Yes, we are.
Yeah. And in fact, I think that music we heard was a production of Connor's. We might talk about that later.
Yeah. My song, Do the Dirt Walk.
Do the Dirt Walk?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
It's got to have its own dance.
It does. It
Heck
does.
Yeah.
I have a dance for it.
Yeah.
All right. Called The Dirt Walk.
The Dirt Walk.
It.
And can you do it?
Yeah.
Well,
It's real simple. It's just like a step.
One step.
Yeah. It's like one of those.
Even you can do it, Sandy.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
probably.
The point. You probably could, actually.
Yeah.
I think, TikTok out of it.
I think I could. Let's not underestimate the...
Oh, Sandy, you could be an influencer.
Oh, I am. I'm operating under an alias. But, yeah, not really.
Old is the new.
Yeah. So, ayahuasca, what's that stuff?
Man, we're going to go right into number 12, huh?
Yeah. What's that all about?
Well, I mean, look... There's a lot of eccentric guys in pro sports, and it's become increasingly clear and apparent that 12 on the Packers is one of them.
Yeah.
He came out and said that in order to prepare himself, I guess emotionally and otherwise, for I think it was one of his two MVP seasons, he had a spiritual journey by drinking ayahuasca, which is one of the world's strongest.
Do you drink it, or is it? It's a mushroom based sort of a.
I mean, I don't know anything about it. I heard all this from a friend of a friend. No, I believe they to make it into a tea, and then you drink it, and you have to, like, I think you travel to some place where you get a shaman and you go on a spiritual journey. And that's where he met his spirit lover, Blue, BLU, and she's half coyote, half star sunrise and sunset.
Okay, well, that's not quite true, but...
I don't know.
But her name is Blue.
BLU, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
that's all I know about her.
Yeah, so Aaron is not exactly mainstream in everything about...
Well, he's from Chico. So it's not, you know,
California.
We can't anticipate that we would understand being, you know, multi-generational Wisconsinites.
So what we're saying is Aaron is a complicated guy.
Yeah, well, he's complex.
Complex. And actually, that was the epiphany I had on the drive here. When I come out here, I think about what we might talk about on the radio. And this morning I realized that complexity is the mother of bias. It's the mother of propaganda. You know, the world has gotten more complex. Earl always criticizes me about talking about answering everything by saying, well, it's complex. And then I start talking about its complexities. And so, you know, things have gotten more complex, and maybe they've always been complex. But the world's appetite to understand complexity, I think, has gone down materially. And I don't know whether it's the appetite or the capability to understand complexity, because I think data sources, information sources, the people who would explain complexity to us have maybe lost, one, the willingness to explain complexity in all of its detail, and two, we've maybe lost our appetite to read about it.
Yeah, but where there is an appetite to read about it, there's also like an unlimited amount of resources that are basically just garbage. You know,
yeah.
They're not true. They're not evidence-based. They don't have any bearing on in reality. And so you get opinion-based media outlets that are, you know, where people are interested, they find an echo chamber for what the things they think they believe, and then that's a powerful medicine.
But we have the media, and it seems to me that the media has morphed too, because I think the media used to spend a greater degree of energy and effort on providing something like less biased information, more balanced information. And I think that they found that that didn't lead to the kind of clicks, it didn't lead to the kind of attention that they could draw from feeding the public with what they wanted to hear rather than maybe what they needed to hear in terms about stuff, about complexity. complex matters. And so now we've ended up with a media that's suspect maybe in and of itself for being less than forthright about all the complexities. And so, and then we've got a public that's suspicious about the media too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, like in the Alex Jones trial, I read an article that talked about how the judge admonished Jones because, it, you know, just because you believe something to be true, Mr. Jones, doesn't mean that it is.
Uh-huh.
And it was because there were strong, there were facts that pointed to the fact that something that he strongly had a strong opinion about was not based in fact. And so the judge was basically admonishing him for giving an answer that was, you know, predicated only on what he believed. And I think that that's what a lot of Americans are doing now. It's, they think they know about whatever it is, and they have a belief about that. And then they go in search of information that reinforces what they believe they know and believe to be true about something.
Well, and the information is going to be presented to them by people who are, who have decided for whatever reason that they're going to explain the complexities to the public. But those people explaining the complexities always tend to carry a bias themselves. So, you know, if you're a lobbyist for an organization and you're going into a congressperson's office and you're trying to explain the complexities of the particular legislative matter that they're considering, let's face it, you're going to explain those complexities in a manner which is strongly biased in favor of your employer, whoever has employed you. And similarly, the government is going to explain things to us in a manner that puts the government in the best light. And that's what I think made people extremely nervous about, for instance, the information the government was giving us about vaccinations. You know, the government had lost its, has over the years lost its credibility with the public. You know, they told us what they wanted us to hear about Vietnam, a whole generation of us, and we all learned about that, you know, startlingly and clearly, and without, it was clear. And by 1980, it was clear that what the government was telling us in 1968 and 69 and 70 wasn't true at the time they were telling us that. And they essentially knew that, but they were explaining the complexities of the matter and clarifying it so we could dumb it down and understand it the way they wanted us to understand it.
Well, it's sure scuttled LBJ's plans, right? I mean,
Yeah, he couldn't.
That couldn't run for president again. He lost his legitimacy.
Yeah. I mean, the Vietnam, cost a guy that was, you know, probably the most powerful president we've had. He was a one-termer, basically. Yeah. And so that was startling.
But, you know, the other thing that I think about as well that we talked about yesterday is the attack on public education. And, you know, the reason as a teacher that I feel, you know, obvious I'm biased on this subject as a teacher to an extent. However, you know, the goal of school is to create critical thinkers, and the notion that there's ideologies that are, you know, embedded in the institution that are then being, you know, used as propaganda in order to sway kids to the left is nonsense. Now, that's not to suggest that there aren't teachers who are biased and teaching in a biased way. Of course there are. You know, there's a spectrum of performance in all professions, and that includes teaching. However, you know, those of us that are doing the job the way that I was trained to, and that we all are, you know, believe, you know, certainly all the teachers I've worked with, is to help students think critically about every subject, to always question, you know, in my classroom, it's question the teacher, question the textbook, you know, ask pressing questions that demand evidence in order to receive an answer that's acceptable to you.
Yeah.
You know, balance that information that you get from different media outlets and diverse sources, and then decide what the truth is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've talked about it on the air earlier, but to me, the most important question in the whole lexicon of questions, the whole is why. And isn't school all about teaching kids to ask themselves why, and then to work out in their mind the process of deliberating to figure out why, right?
Absolutely. And I think, too, like, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, I was saying, you know, in a classroom, you're always, as a teacher, especially in social studies, you're always encouraged when a student shows strong convictions on anything, especially intellectual topics and complex topics. So, I mean, if I have a student that shows strong opinions or beliefs in any direction, I always reward that by saying that's so great that you have strong ideas about that.
Yeah.
But I tell them, but don't become rigid. You know, make sure you continue to ask why. Because how old are you right now? Well, I'm 13. Okay. Well, when you're 42 and you have kids and a house and a mortgage and everything else, you know, your opinion on that might well change, and you don't want to become hardened to understanding, you know, the context with which within which you live and the way and things that you therefore then believe.
Well, and I think the answer to the question why is always based on factual evidence, and it's based on a development of further information. So the answer to why can evolve over time as the amount of information gathered to explain to you why becomes more profound. You know, the answer to the pantheistic religions back 4000 BC to why do we have thunderstorms, you know, was a different answer than they've developed since then, as we've developed far more information about how it is that thunderstorms are generated, right? So, you know, it used to be caused by a god named Thor, you know, and now maybe the analysis is different as to the cause. Now, there still might be a supernatural cause to the very most elemental cause of weather. But you know, that's a whole different analysis.
I've been watching an outstanding Netflix show on the Scandinavian version of the story of Thor, by the way. Ragnarok.
Uh-huh.
It's a great show.
Yeah, well,
check it out.
Yeah, there we go. That's yes. In fact, I've watched Ragnarok. I believe. Yeah, yeah. It's there's a lot of violence amongst the Vikings. And bloodthirsty.
It's a modern story. It's a teenager.
Oh, okay. This is an updated version.
It's an updated version of Thor. He becomes. It's a teenager who becomes Thor.
Ah, well, and so we've jumped the track.
There it is.
Yeah, but back to complexity. Well, that show might be complex. And we have a break going, Connor? Is that where we're headed?
Yes, we do. We have about 1 minute left.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I intend today, I think, to try and weave this notion of complexity into the things we talk about, because it strikes me that the American public's view of issues in foreign affairs like Ukraine and China are marked by a simplistic analysis of what are end up being really complex issues. The same is true with domestic affairs and with the economy. We've gotten so used to having things dumbed down for us that maybe we need to step back from this and figure out that we need to get back to individual deliberate thinking, individual questioning why, and get ourselves to a position where with greater understandings about the complexity of why, we can possibly reach agreements. I think we're going to a break now. We'll be back to this after the break. Sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. This is the first hour of today's show, even though it seems like it might be the second hour. We had a repeat for the first hour. We had a little bit of a technical glitch that caused us to work ourselves backwards into yesterday. Today I've got Scott Williams here with me again today. Scott, how are you?
Good morning.
Connor, how do folks call into the show?
Call 844-967-2789.
And was that another piece of your music we just heard? I think it was.
Yeah, I mean,
what was that? That one wasn't called Dirty Walk, was it?
No, Dirty Walk. No, that one's called Burn. It's a love song.
Oh, so that's not got a dance.
Yeah, it doesn't have a dance. It has a spoken word outro.
Uh huh.
I like it.
It was cool. Cool. Yeah. So we've been talking about complexity and how it is that the complexity of life and the complexity of the world today has been simplified for us, and maybe we as a people have been disabled or are not able to go out and pursue an analysis of the situation to ask ourselves why sufficiently, so that the way we get spoon-fed the answer to the question why ends up creating bias, ends up being essentially propaganda, ends up misleading us with conspiracy theories, ends up making us vulnerable to all kinds of reactions that are possibly emotionally driven and not factually driven because of the way we reach for the answer to why.
But you have to remember, too, I mean, so many people in our society don't have, they feel they actually don't, or they feel they don't have the time and energy to actually, you know, invest the time to go and receive good information to arrive at an answer to a question of why, which is why we're all falling victim to repeatedly, like finding this, you know, like you talked about earlier, the silver bullet, the answer to problems, yeah. or a solution that has three bullet points, and then that's the end of it. And because we want things to have, when we do have a question, we want easy access to information that gives us an answer to our question. And that opens the door to people accepting arguments that don't have any bearing on fact or reality.
Yeah, I mean, some people call it dumbing down, but I mean, I think the public is interested in simplified, you know, the bottom line. We've all gotten used to saying, come on, give me the bottom line. What's the answer? What's the story here? And of course, the bottom line skips through all of the detail and all of the factual complexities, and the bottom line can be skewed entirely by how it is that someone decides to, or from what bias someone decides to analyze the bottom line. Why do we have poverty in the inner city? Some people would say, well, it's because those people don't know how to work, you know, and that they aren't working, or it could be a whole set of other analyses. But that bottom line that they get to is what seems to make all the difference in our society, and yet the process of analysis is really the most important part of the process, because the bottom line is going to be that people can analyze the same set of facts and they can possibly reach different conclusions, but to the extent that they can analyze the same set of facts, they're more likely to reach something like a common ground about what the situation is. And
depending on their motivations.
Well, but the motivation, you know, I tend to diminish in my mind the extent to which people have ill-conceived motivations. I think most people have motivations that are lofty, but they, some of the circumstances in their life make it more difficult for them to implement or to understand what the actions are that will reflect lofty motives.
So you're talking about everyone but politicians in America.
Well, politicians. I mean, there are people who obviously have biases, and some of those biases, you know, politicians would tell you and might even believe that they're out there to accomplish good, and that what's so important about them getting reelected is that they're such good people. That they need to be in office so that they can accomplish their good for the public good.
But if we have a collection of things that they themselves have said over time that show that they're not good, then how do we?
Well, that's a different story.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It is complicated.
Complex, isn't it?
It is. That's one of the complicated. That's one of the complexities. But you know, I think this problem of complexity is actually not understood sufficiently by the public at large, and their desire to have the bottom line fed to them creates so many problems.
I mean, I can say that I'm included in this. You know, there's a lot about what politicians are supposed to be doing, certainly Congress, members of Congress, you know, negotiating ideas, you know, developing policies and bills that then can become laws. You know, and from the outside looking in, you know, it seems that the job of politicians in their own mind has become to stick it to the other side and do that in any way possible. And so they're walking around doing things that we don't perceive actually be their job. Their job is to negotiate, find common ground, and develop policies that would help the people that need help.
But
they don't do that in either party.
Yeah, but you understand that that's driven by a sense of righteousness that the party that they represent is so important to the outcome. To the outcomes that they think are important for the American scene, for the American culture, you know, it will always be presented to you by those who reflect the broad party view that they're carrying a very important mission in their quiver on the conservative side. They might say it's Christian nationalism. It's the fabric of Americanism and American society. And on the liberal side, they would tell you that it's protecting those who are in need and those without a voice. You know, they have a broad they have a broad sense of the righteousness of what they're pursuing.
Yeah, but most of those people...
And the ends justify the means.
And most of those people in both parties are people in their 70s and 80s leading both parties. Those sensibilities are not shared in people in generation like Z, I'd say through Generation X, there is a commonality in some of those sentiments to an extent, but certainly the younger generation coming to mind, people in the baby boomers, you guys worked for one corporation or one firm or whatever it was, and you had these careers, you're able to buy homes, things like that. The generation now is not experiencing that.
Well, I think that's another thing.
Expectations of politicians are changing, and it's morphing right now.
Yeah, I think in the rest of the show we'll try to focus on specific issues, but I think we've identified that there are these different vantage points that come at this question of why, and also come at the question of or the issue of what kind of means do people utilize to achieve the ends that they identify out of this whole pursuit of why and what is important. We've got another break coming up.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll come back shortly. And I don't know what...
We can talk to a younger generation and Connor. We'll get Connor's input.
Well, we can get Connor. We can get him to decipher. What do we got, 50 seconds here, Connor?
We got about 40 or no.
Well, we don't have to count it down. We'll, Sandy Williams, son Scott Williams here. We're here talking about today. We intend to talk about issues, the general issues of the day, but we intend to look at them by trying to dissect the extent to which their complexity has caused us to oversimplify the answers we're getting and the way we're looking at them. We'll be back after the break. Show. We've got Scott Williams here today.
Here I am.
We got some music from Connor Boston playing there. What did we just hear there, Connor? I'm interested in this.
That's one of the other artists that I work with. His name is Riss Rocket, and we produced that together.
Uh-huh.
He's singing on it. He's a really talented guy. So,
yeah. Well, and so we've been talking about complexity. We also talked about how it is that Aaron Rodgers is apparently resorting to psychedelics to solve for complexity. Is that what it is? Do you think he gets the playbook? He gets a whole new vantage point on the playbook when he's...
The quarterback position becomes easier when you can see the spiritual dimension when you line up under center. So for him, I think that's why he put together the MVP season. My only thing with the ayahuasca thing with 12 is, hey, Aaron, if you're listening... Which I know you're not, but if you are, hey, Donald Trump's in Waukesha today. Did you know that?
Yeah, I just heard
okay,
that.
Okay, we'll change lanes back to Aaron. But Aaron, if you're listening, I'm okay with the ayahuasca thing as long as you do it before the NFC Championship game as well, because it seems to have worked wonders on the regular season. So I'm just saying, don't break what's don't change, don't fix what's not broken, and just ride that groovy train all the way to the Super Bowl.
So I wonder, here we sit out in the studio in Waukesha, Scott, and now we just hear that Donald Trump is within just minutes of us, I suspect.
I know. I'd throw a shout out, but I don't think you're allowed to be obscene on the radio.
Well,
so.
It's no, please not.
No, I'm not going to be.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah. So complexity.
Still thinking. One more second. It was a couple sentences.
You stifled it.
It was not two thumbs up. It was different. Here we go.
There. Okay.
Okay, I'm good. I'm done. Yeah,
all right. That's good.
That's for you, Donald.
Yeah. So, talking about complexity and the issues of today, Donald Trump, a simple thing. Donald Trump is here. He's endorsing Tim Michaels. The public apparently might think that's important. I wonder if they should ask themselves why. Why would that be important? And what is it about the endorsement that could be important? Clearly, it's not important. But but it is viewed as important by at least a portion of the electorate. And I wonder if they've really parsed through why in the world they think that's important and what the implications are of handing to Donald Trump something as important as him being able to anoint people for election. And what would the election of people that he anoints across the country, what would that mean to the country?
You know, and doesn't that speak to the like a flaw really of just like the two-party system generally, though? I mean, where we've gone is with how polarized we are. Well, it's us versus them to the nth degree, and it doesn't matter. The only way we can pass laws in this country right now is if we have 100% party, you know, towing the line.
Well, I think there's that, but also I think there are the people in this country who are worried about what it is that Donald Trump is up to. Why is it that he's trying so hard to, one, take over the Republican Party, and two, make sure that the people he wants to get elected. And he's worrying about election to offices that national politicians have never worried about before. So he's running around the country lobbying for people to get elected Secretary of State in Georgia, in Arizona, in all kinds of places. And of course, it's very clear why he's interested
in that. Well, it turns out that staying out of jail is extremely motivating for people.
Well, there's that too. And there's the...
Or at least being charged with...
Yes.
Some type of criminal... enterprise. I mean, I don't know what you call it. Whatever you want to say. I mean, the question now, if you've watched the hearings or at least seen the bullet list of things that were covered in each of the hearings, you know, and now the cover up that is abundantly clear, you know, the question is, you know, that begs the question of, you know, we talked about it yesterday briefly. Why? Like, why has all this information gone missing?
Well, yes. And so, you know, it's clear that one of the reasons Trump is so highly motivated to be politically active now is to create the defense, sort of the sociological defense, the geopolitical defense, that it's a political witch hunt to chase him criminally.
And to be back with privilege, with the executive privilege.
Well, the executive privilege exists because he was an executive. It wouldn't exist because of his ongoing executive status.
But if he were to become the candidate and then we shy away from any...
No, the privilege is there because of just attorney-client privilege, and it's a fundamental... And that's why, you know, there is complexities. The public is being fed information about, for instance, this trial ongoing and Cipollone and what is privileged. And there probably ought to be more education process through the information so that the public can better understand the issues that are being discussed. Instead, we get it discussed in sound bites, and so we don't quite understand the issues.
What is privilege then?
Well, privilege is what everyone is afforded when they talk to their attorney. When you go to an attorney and ask them for legal advice, you're entitled to ask for advice about anything that might be worrying you, and you're entitled to secrecy about that, because otherwise you won't talk to your lawyer. It's a little bit like the secrecy that's afforded you when you go to see your doctor.
But the president has, but the conversations between cabinet members and the president are also afforded privileges in a legal setting, correct?
Well, there's privilege afforded, certainly the conversations between the lawyer and the president. Then there is also privilege afforded with respect to executive privilege, which is a different kind of privilege. And the executive privilege is afforded to the president in the context of when he's in the president office, not when he's running for the presidential office. When he's sitting in the presidential office, he's entitled to ask his aides and those who advise him any question and to get answers.
Is it literally geographic privilege then, or is it just in the conduct of president?
It's in the conduct of his presidency and in the conduct of his discussions with his aides about seeking advice about what he can do in the capacity as president. And so do we have a caller?
Yes, we do. We have a CJ.
Okay, CJ. Well, what do you have to say today, CJ?
Well, thanks for taking my call to the Williams duo. Listening to you earlier, you were speaking about the press and the biases of it, because I believe there is biases. That's why I watch the number one news network, Fox News, for 25 years. They've been number one because they play both sides of issues. You don't just hear one side. But I'm so tired of this focus on January 6th. when this president, and if we would have known about the truth of the Hunter Biden issue and the selling out to China, to the big guy, which is John Durham, special counsel, is finding out 30 subpoenas for that issue, but you folks never talk about that because I don't believe you want to know the truth. If people would have known about Hunter Biden, they say 10 to 15% would have voted the other way.
So
I don't care if I don't care about 2024 and President Trump, whether he runs right now or not. But this president, he's watching China buy up our farmland now in America.
That's been going on for decades, man. That's not new.
Well, CJ, let's slow down a little bit. You got a mouthful, several mouthfuls that you want to talk about, but I think we should parse it out into pieces. Number one, you complain about the news media being biased, and yet you listen to one news media, Fox. Now, that begs the question.
No, I watch them all.
Oh, you do watch them all. Okay, well, then you are.
All of them.
Well, it's hard to
wake up and watch Morning Joe.
Uh-huh.
That's where I start my day at 5 in the morning.
Okay.
And I watched that bias, where
uh-huh.
he's got a panel of a bunch of progressive liberal Democrats, and that's about it, and a couple of rhinos, maybe. So, okay, go ahead. So I don't watch just Fox. And Brett Baer, that is the news. That's truly a news journalist, Brett
uh-huh.
Baer.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
in any case, the news is presented to us. And any presenter of the news, when they parse it out to us, are simplifying it and explaining it to us, and that process of simplification necessarily is a strainer through which we receive bias. And of course, CJ, you have bias. And you know what? We all have bias.
We do.
And so that what we have to admit to ourselves is that the way we receive this information is suffers our own bias as well.
Yeah. And remember, number one doesn't equal true. Here we go. Yeah.
And I think we
for
have
25 years.
Yeah, whatever, man. Rankings are rankings.
Years.
Well,
yeah.
well, rankings are.
What is that?
They represent popularity. Yeah. Popularity doesn't represent truth.
Is there a Hunter Biden laptop story now?
Well, of course there is, and I think, and actually, you and I both know the Hunter Biden laptop story because it has been covered.
We should talk about Obama's suit color too. Let's go back to that one.
No.
Oh, man.
Well, no, it's been. Of course, it's been covered. The question is what, you know. You have a question as to what's been done about.
That was buried before the election. Come on, you got to be truthful. At least be.
Sure, there's a story, man. There's a story. It's been out there.
No, the story. Well, I would agree with you that the news media generally is suspect, and the news media is suspect because of their need to obtain popularity and to pursue popularity.
Clickbait.
And clickbait is what is pursued, and so both
this
sides.
This president is selling out our country to China.
All right. Okay.
He's
well, let's
gonna watch Taiwan.
All right. Good talk.
Get run over. And thank God Nancy Pelosi's got bigger balls than he does.
On that note,
we're gonna go to break shortly, CJ. But in fact, we're going to break now.
Drop it.
Here we go.
Eddie Fortin, man.
This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Friday morning.
I got something to say.
And what do we got going here, Connor? What's this?
It's right there.
Right there?
Yeah, it's the intro track on the album.
Uh-huh. Well, it's kind of cool. So this is, I'm asking Connor to play some productions. He's a music producer, as well as a music performer, I guess. We haven't gotten any of his performances yet, but we've gotten some productions.
Yeah. No, I'm playing on these two.
Oh, you are?
Yeah,
okay.
The synths and the keyboards and stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's me playing on
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we still got CJ on the line?
Yeah, yes, we do.
CJ. So, you know, you're making broad statements, particularly knowledgeable sounding statements about China and about the situation in Taiwan. And so I thought we might just dig into the details and facts a little bit about China, because China's complicated. It's a complex issue. You've simplified it in your mind, it sounds like, to down to a very clear proposition that America ought to be all in on Taiwan. And I'm interested in the level of knowledge you've pursued in terms of developing independent knowledge about that. For instance, do you understand that we signed a treaty with the People's Republic of China in 1979 that was
the all-one policy?
Oh yeah, well it was more
China
than,
one policy.
It was more than that. Yeah. So this isn't going to be a true-false or a single-answer test. I just want to get into a discussion with you about it. We entered into a treaty with them that was the realization of the agreements we had reached in 1973-74 when Nixon and Kissinger opened up relationships with China. And do you understand that at the time of the 1973-74 opening up of the relationship, the United States had at that point not decided what the status of the Communist Party was in terms of its control of China, and was at least pretending that the Kuomintang, the party that had under Chiang Kai-shek, which had evacuated China and had moved to Formosa, that they were, and they as a government were asserting that they were the legitimate government of China. And we, up until 1979, had left open the question of whether Kuomintang government, what was the government of China, or the People's Republic was the government of China. And you understand that in 1979, we signed a treaty in which we said that the People's Republic of China was the legitimate government of all of China, which included Formosa, which is where the Kuomintang government was headquartered. Do you understand all that?
No, not exactly.
Okay,
but
all right. Let's talk about.
Of course, you don't want to.
No, I'm not.
Do you care if he's the big guy, Sandy? Care?
Well, wait, CJ. If you can't stay on track, so we can talk about an issue.
I am on track.
No, you're not. Of course, you're not on track. You're not on track. You want to talk about an alleged corruption of the Biden family,
yeah,
and I'm trying to talk about United States foreign policy and whether or not our foreign policy ought to include not only the armament of Taiwan, but the commitment of U.S. resources and potentially troops and national treasure to the defense of Taiwan. Aren't those two entirely different issues?
Not at this point with this president.
All right. Well, that's because CJ, I'm not going to give you a platform to talk about anything you want to talk about.
Of course you won't.
Well, of course not.
Talking about this president.
No. I'm not talking about. I'm not. I'm talking.
I know you're not.
I know. I'm trying to dissect. Look, I am not in. I'm not in line with. Stop it, CJ. Just a minute. We need to have a conversation. I'm not in line with this administration's policy about Ukraine, and I'm not sure what this government's policy is about China right now. You seem to have a very certain idea in your mind of what that policy ought to be. You suggested that Nancy Pelosi was representing the correct policy of the United States by going to Taiwan and essentially provoking a reaction on the part of China with respect to the visit to Taiwan of the number three person in power in the United States. She's the third in succession to the line to the presidency, and so would be viewed by the world as a very important visitor to a place. That's what I'm talking about. You want to talk about...
I'm talking about the weakness of this president from Afghanistan, where we lost 13 soldiers, and now we got Yemen in Afghanistan turning over strategic air bases, Bagram, to China. This guy is the big guy.
Okay.
And he's... don't even care. You don't
What does the big guy mean? I don't know what that means.
He got $10 million. $10 million.
CJ,
bribed by China.
CJ, let me
like
wait. CJ, wait. I'm eager to let you call into the show, and I'm eager to have conversations with you, but I think you have to understand that it needs to be a conversation, and it needs to be the kind of a conversation that the American public needs to start engaging in, which is to stay on a subject, to try and dissect the facts, to try and understand the facts, and then, after we go through the whole process of facts, we can then ask the questions why and what should we do? But if we don't have those kind of conversations, and if all we do is fall back to political conversations about who ought to be in office and who ought to get elected, we aren't going to get anywhere there. So, CJ, we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week. But
Joe Biden is our president. The UK is the big guy. I know you're not.
No,
that's the issue, Sandy. Is he the big guy? He's turning over farmland, agriculture. He is selling out our country in front of our eyes.
Wait a minute, CJ. Let's talk about the extent to which the president would be in a position to block the sale of farmland in Nebraska to a business person in China. What action would he need to take to block the sale of, let's say that your grandfather owned 20,000 acres of Nebraska farmland, and the family was no longer interested in farming and was looking to sell that acreage to the highest bidder. And so they put it up for basically auction. And lo and behold, the winning bid in that auction ends up being someone with a Chinese name who has decided that from China they're very interested in owning farmland in Nebraska.
Build a factory and give people lots of jobs.
So that's what's going to happen. And your family is going to be enriched substantially by the fact that this bid was a very successful bid and made the family very happy when they opened it. And so that's the situation we've got manyfold in terms of how farmland is being sold and bought in the United States. And you want to blame this on this president. Number one, it's been ongoing.
No, I'm not. Just on this president.
No, you are. That's. Look, here we are in a subject.
You raised this subject.
CJ, we'll talk to you next week.
You
CJ, thanks. Thanks for calling in. Thank you for calling in.
The nebulous big guy.
So
it's like good guys with guns. It's like same nebulous.
I guess. So I hate to cut someone off. Like CJ. CJ's a regular caller, and it's a little. Frustrating because what I'm trying to talk about today is a discipline that I hope we could try to instill in ourselves to talk about things factually and then to talk about things based on the facts to understand the question of why is something happening and what should be happening. And when you get into the what should be happening, now you can get into serious discussion about a disagreement about what should be happening based on the facts. But if all you do is get to what should be happening without even doing the rest of it, you end up talking like CJ, which is a problem in America today.
It's when there's a conversation that clearly is going to go down a rabbit hole where that requires like statements of evidence and a discussion of the validity of evidence, we revert back to arguable points.
Well, I think it has to do with what's...
I'm not trying to condescend you, CJ. I'm saying we all do it. When we are pressured.
Oh, no, I think we ought to figure out why we do it. And I think the reason why we do it is it's because it's what we've all kind of reverted to, which is to line up with what we want to think and how we want to believe. And so, the question of whether Hunter Biden was involved in corrupt activities and whether that somehow channels up to the current president is an important issue, but it's a totally independent issue from what our foreign policy ought to be. And it might channel into the question of whether our foreign policy is being conducted in a manner which is compromised, but that isn't the way CJ was presenting it, number one, and number two, there is no factual connection. So I think we are now at a break again.
Going to a break in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well,
20 seconds now.
Now we can just talk this down. No, we'll be back after the break. And I think after the break, we'll try and focus in a bit on the Chinese policies.
Because the individual is the only thing there. Then you only really fight fair. Fair isn't gonna be fair. Because the individual is the only thing there.